If you're in the thick of residency or just trying to survive a stretch of 12s, you don't need one more thing on your plate. And that's why I really like Oakstone CME. They really get it. And Oakstone isn't trying to pile on one more thing in terms of a checkbox. It's really supporting you with CME that adapts to you and not the other way around. Whether you're commuting, doing laundry, or finally grabbing a moment to yourself, their platform lets you listen or watch whenever and wherever you are, on your phone, on your laptop, wherever. The ACP Mixup Audio Companion is one of my go-tos, short, high yield, very manageable, even when I'm feeling like I'm running out of fumes. So you don't have to carve out a big study block, just pop in your earbuds, finish a module before your coffee gets cold, and know that you're actually moving forward. Oakstone is CME on your terms because burnout is real and support should be too. Check it out at oakstone.com/mixup. That's oakstone/MKSAP. Use the code CORA30 for 30% off from November 1st to January 31st, 2026. It's exclusive to Corian listeners, and don't forget the code CORA30. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
One thing that I liked that someone said to me once was, it's not always right to follow the guidelines, but if you're not following the guidelines, you want to be able to articulate why you're not following the guidelines.
Welcome to Beyond Journal Club, a collaboration between Core IM and NEJM Group.
The goal of Beyond Journal Club is to take landmark clinical trials and put them into context, telling the story of how we got to where we were and what it means to take care of our patients. I'm Dr. Shroy Trivedi, an internist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Greg Katz, cardiologist at NYU.
And I'm Dr. Clem Lee, a MedPeds hospitalist in Boston and a guest editor at NEJM.
And I'm Dr. Manali Nigam, an editorial fellow at New England Journal of Medicine and a neurologist at Mass General Brigham.
And today we're looking at antibiotic duration with the help of the BALANCE trial published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2025. And I know this has been a question that's made me pause. When can my patient come off antibiotics, or patients also want to know about? And on top of that, there's so many people reading our notes, case managers, you name it, who are asking on the rounds, hey, does this person need a PICC line? When can they go home? How long do they really need antibiotics for?
And while this question may seem straightforward at first glance, I think it's a much more difficult question to tease out since many factors go into it.
So first, we'll try to think like an infectious disease doctor on how they approach antibiotic duration, which sometimes I think for many of us can feel like they're pulling random numbers out of a hat, or sometimes I visualize them like with a dartboard and just like, oh, today it's 7, nope, 10, but it is a lot more nuanced than that.
And then we're going to look at the prior data investigating different antibiotic therapy durations, and specifically for bacteremia.
And that will bring us to the BALANCE trial, which asked the question, is a 7-day course of antibiotics long enough to treat bacteremia?
And then we'll dive into how this trial can change clinical practice, if at all.
So, Manali, I love that you chose the study on antibiotic duration, but I was surprised when we reached out to ID colleagues to get their input. One of our colleagues said, quote unquote, I feel somewhat uncomfortable to even discuss bacteremia as a generalizable thing divorced from nuances.
And so I think it's hard to design trials that capture, you know, the nuances of every patient. So, you know, my process of going through this study, the BALANCE trial, was initially sort of recoiled from it. Of like, I don't want this trial. I want something really specific about Enterococcus or something like that.
That's Dr. Matt Guasten.
Hello, my name is Matthew Guasten. I'm an infectious disease doctor practicing in Massachusetts.
And yeah, these comments rightfully made us appreciate for us to even have a meaningful discussion on antibiotic duration in this trial. We need to first understand what are the unique factors that go into the decision making. And there's three big ones: the host, the organism, and the primary source of infection.
So the general gist with bacteremia that we have usually used is that antibiotics go for about 7 to 14 days.
And so you can take that number and you can titrate up or down. First, you look at the host. Were they hemodynamically stable or unstable? They have good source control. How quickly do they get better? They have hardware that could get infected. Are they immunocompromised? And get really complicated.
So if someone is in sort of fulminant septic shock when they come in, but, you know, they get a dose of antibiotics, they briskly improve, blood culture is clear, and then you're discussing duration on, say, the next day, that person, I would typically feel pretty comfortable going with the short end of the spectrum of duration in terms of 7 days. For example, if the patient came in sort of really sick with septic shock, the blood culture's kind of stayed positive, for just the next day, like one out of four bottles or something like that. They took a while to improve. They're a little bit older and maybe they have sort of diabetes or some minor nudge of immunocompromise, not like what was excluded in the balance trial. You know, we might say we would be discussing on rounds, for example, in fellowship, 7 days versus 14 days and where we fall based on our judgment of the patient in front of us.
So it sounds like there is a lot of nuance depending on who the host is and how they're responding in terms of their fever curve, the blood culture has cleared, if they have hardware, source control, etc.
And then the second big factor to really look at is the actual organism. And here the caveat is we're not talking about Staph aureus bacteremia or Staph lugdunensis bacteremia, which obviously behave differently. They have higher risk of complications like endocarditis, etc.
Gram-negative rod bacteremia typically makes people quite sick and clears quite briskly. You know, it's not as troublesome. Some of the streps are more nuanced decision as Staph aureus.
So that nuanced decision with strep resonates. My job as a cardiologist, when I see bacteremia, is I need to rule out endocarditis. I need to rule out endocarditis. I need to rule out endocarditis. And when I see strep viridans, I'm thinking this is really high risk for infecting the heart versus like strep pyogenes, which doesn't make me scared in the same way.
Yeah. And for some of us who don't think about the heart all the time, no offense, Greg, Dr. Gwazin showed us this beautiful graphic we can link in the show notes that shows the different types of strep. And for each one, their specific risk of endocarditis. And it's so beautiful and color coded from green to red for low to high risk. And I really couldn't stop thinking about this graph.
Oh, man. Sounds like it's a winner, but it seems like it's coming in your dreams now.
Yeah. I don't think I really knew what a vivid dream was until this popped up in there.
I think this is a great source for me personally. Greg, you're not the only one who thinks about endocarditis. I get consulted all the time as a neurologist dealing with septic emboli from endocarditis. But, you know, I think turning this to the last big factor here is the actual site of infection.
Yeah. And as our reviewer, Dr. Lindsay Baden, quotes from Cotton Eye Joe, where did it come from and where did it go?
Oh, is that a Cotton Eye Joe?
Yes, it is.
That's brilliant.
When I read it, it didn't. But I'm like, now that you say it, yes.
Exactly. Depending on where the source of infection is, we can think of bacteremia differently. So for example, osteomyelitis-associated bacteremia, you want to treat much longer versus bacteremia associated with cellulitis.
Group A, strep cellulitis, you know. Our guidelines say you can do 5 days, even in patients associated with bacteremia. So I think there's guidelines and there's studies and there's expert opinion and there's sort of all of these overlapping resources to draw from.
The more we talk about it, the more it does seem like antibiotic duration is really hard to discuss in broad strokes since there are just so many variables.
Exactly. And then to summarize the section on the general kind of approach to antibiotic durations, it's really these slight nudges in the three kind of main factors. I like to think of as HOS, right? H-O-S, host, organism, and source.
The most important thing here is doing no harm to our patients, right? Risking a relapse or recurrence with a shorter duration treatment.
There's harm in both directions. A PICC line for an extra week carries harm. So we need to balance the risk-benefit conversation, and we need to make a balanced decision. Get it?
Nice. And with that, let's take a look at the research and the direction of the data where we're seeing these trends in shorter antibiotic duration treatments as a safe option for many patients. So researchers really started looking at this question of optimal antibiotic duration for infections more generally in the late 90s and early 2000s. Larger scale randomized control trials really started coming out in the past decade.
Yeah, the data has really shown that for many of the common infections like UTIs, community-acquired pneumonia, and cellulitis, shorter courses are just as good as longer ones. Now, there are some major exceptions to this. Notably, the main one's probably osteomyelitis. So for bacteremia, we're also left wondering whether a shorter is just as good, like most of the other infections, or is this more like osteomyelitis, a type of infection where shorter would do harm to the patient?
The first contemporary trial to really do a deep dive on whether shorter antibiotics was good enough was the STOP-IT trial. STOP-IT was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2015, looking at intra-abdominal infections. And this was super provocative. And I give the investigators a ton of courage for even asking about if this group of patients could have a shorter duration of antibiotics and whether that was acceptable.
Investigators looked at patients with intra-abdominal infections from various sources, including 1 to 2% of patients who subsequently developed bacteremia. they either got up to 10 days of antibiotics or only a median of 4 days.
And it's important to note, patients in this study all underwent procedures to obtain source control. So we didn't need to worry about an untreated abscess or anything else lurking beneath the surface.
And then, as you guys can probably predict from the punchline, the shorter antibiotic course, a median of 4 days, wow, was not inferior to that longer antibiotic therapy when it came to any infection recurrence or death within 30 days after that procedural source control you just talked about, Greg.
And so even though it was just 1-2% of those patients who had bacteremia, we saw that there was no signal for harm with the shorter course.
And building on Stop It comes the Bacteremia Duration Study Group, which published a trial in 2019, randomizing 600 patients with uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia to receive either 7 or 14 days of antibiotics.
And you guess it again, the 7 days of antibiotics was non-inferior to the 14 days of antibiotics for the 90-day composite outcome of all-cause mortality, relapse, and readmission or extended hospital stay.
And then that 7-day time frame for uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia was reinforced again in an RCT in JAMA of 2020 looking at adults with uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia. They found that when adults had 7 days of antibiotic treatment or a CRP-guided duration arm, I'm a fan of CRPs, those two were non-inferior to the fixed 14-day treatment arm with regards to clinical failure rates.
And so these data looking at shorter antimicrobial durations for bacteremia built on other data from ventilator-associated pneumonia, pyelonephritis, community-acquired pneumonia, cellulitis. Basically, you name the infection, and there's probably a clinical trial suggesting that a shorter duration of therapy is just as good or at least not inferior to longer durations.
So let's finally get into the BALANCE trial. Number one priority, what is BALANCE? So BALANCE stands for Bacteremia Antibiotic Length Actually Needed for Clinical Effectiveness, BALANCE. I love that actually is in this acronym. It's a little bit of sass from the infectious disease doctors.
Climbing your acronyms.
So the BALANCE trial was a large, multi-center, open-label, non-inferiority trial that randomly assigned patients with various types of bacteremia to either a 7-day or a 14-day course of antibiotics. The sources of bacteremia range from urinary tract infections, the abdomen, the lung, vascular catheters, to skin and soft tissue infections.
Investigators enrolled over 3,600 patients across 7 countries between 2014 to 2023. It's 6 times larger than any previous trials, and so it's by far the biggest study to date that investigates antibiotic duration for bacteremia.
Yeah, and it's probably the largest that we're going to see for a long time. And so a trial this large often ends up being the final word for quite some time.
And so building on the nuance that our ID colleagues really reinforced that we should have when we think about these patients, let's talk about who is excluded. And so no patients who were immunocompromised, which was defined as neutropenia or immunosuppressants post-transplant, no one with prosthetic valves or grafts, and then infections with complications like endocarditis or osteomyelitis.
They also excluded patients with Staph aureus bacteremia, which reinforces the difference between Staph aureus and the other organisms like we discussed before.
Yeah, and then the primary outcome was death, actually, from any cause by 90 days from a bacteremia diagnosis. And this was based on the date of their first positive blood culture.
All right, Manali, do you want to do the honor of telling us what they found?
What they found was that 7-day antibiotic treatment group was non-inferior to the 14-day antibiotic treatment group for 90-day all-cause mortality. So 14.5% of patients died in the 7-day arm versus 16.1% of patients in the 14-day arm.
It's pretty crazy. Like 15% of patients were dead at 3 months in this trial.
Very morbid.
So it's just like bacteremia is not benign. So apart from the number of antibiotic-free days, which, no surprise, favored the shorter antibiotic duration arm, none of the other secondary outcomes were different between the groups. And those included ICU admission, relapse of infection, C. diff, secondary infection, length of stay. None of them were different. It was all neutral.
As someone who likes thinking about antibiotic duration, I think it's a little bit interesting that we didn't see any difference in C. diff infections and drug-resistant organisms or the length of stay. But as the authors note, they didn't really do active surveillance for drug resistance.
Yeah, even though this trial didn't show any difference, I guess it shouldn't make us give up on antibiotic stewardship by reducing antibiotic use.
And antibiotic resistance is a much different question than a rare drug side effect. There's this multiplicative effect when you extrapolate longer durations of antibiotics across lots of patients in many different hospitals. And so just because there's no signal here, it doesn't mean that it's not impactful to shorten durations of antibiotics for long-term, broader antibiotic stewardship questions.
So I think taken all together, the primary outcome seems like a promising finding, again moving us in the direction of shorter antibiotics, as with many of the other trials in ID.
Yeah, definitely. But I think before we get too excited, I think it's good to look under the hood a little bit, look at the fine print. What are the limitations?
So let's call out a handful of them. There was variability in antibiotic selection, dose, and route. There weren't any placebo controls since there was a variety of pathogens in the antibiotics.
Yeah, and then the second limitation is that there was a significant portion of the patients who had E. coli bacteremia from UTI, right? Pretty uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia that we've seen in previous trial data.
Yeah, to be fair, they did include some gram-positives in this study. So they included Enterococcus, coag-negative staph, strep pneumo, group A strep, and group B strep. But the total percentage of gram-positives of all of these added together was only about 20%.
That's true. It was only 20% of patients, but the total number of patients in this trial was so large that we had just as many gram-positive bacteremia patients in this trial as we did in any of the other clinical trials.
I guess this trial is the largest that had a gram-positive bacteremia cohort, right? So yes, the vast majority was uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia, but we can and do have some signal in the gram-positive realm too.
And the last limitation was the rates of deviation from the protocols that were set up. And it was pretty high. So 24% of the patients assigned to the 7-day arm got much more than 7 days, and 17% of those assigned to the 14-day arm got fewer than 14 days.
So that means for a quarter of patients, the doctors at the bedside were worried that the infection was more complicated and they needed a longer duration of treatment. We don't know exactly what the features or nudges were that pushed them to think a longer course was more appropriate. And so we're a little bit in the dark about that.
Thankfully, it didn't seem like the antibiotics ended up being that much longer. The median antibiotic therapy in the 7-day arm just ended up being 8 days.
Awesome. I really appreciate going over the fine print and the limitations, because I can imagine if you ask this question to AI, someone might then quote this trial with the headline of 7 is non-inferior to 14. But here we see that it's a muddy crossover and nuances of what bugs were actually involved. I've really started paying closer attention to what's in the products that we use at home, especially with little ones running around. And once you realize what's hiding in conventional cleaners, it's really hard to unsee. They have a starter kit that is plant and mineral based and basically replaces everything from your bathroom cleaner to your laundry detergent in just one concentrate. So you can use it for washing produce, to makeup brushes, you name it. And because it's refillable, each bottle ends up costing just about $2. Like, that's awesome. And so as someone who's trying to cut down on harmful exposure, I think this is a powerful and simple swap. It's gentle enough for babies and pets and also tough enough to handle real messes. And I've seen it over and over. And honestly, that peace of mind, worth it. So get yourself and your loved ones the gift of Clean with Branch Basics. For a limited time, they're actually offering 15% off and free shipping on their premium starter kit when you use the code CoreIM at branchbasics.com/CoreIM. That's 15% off your order at branchbasics.com/CoreIM with the promo code CoreIM. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. And with that, let's get into the episode. At CoreIM, we're all about the real things that make life in healthcare a little easier, and scrubs can be one of them. I'm still amazed at all my colleagues who look so put together when they wear FIGS, and it's awesome. FIGS scrubs are built for people like us, doctors, residents, students who are on their feet most of the day and need gear that actually works. They're lightweight, stretchy, breathable, full of small functional details that matter, right? Tons of pockets, zippers that don't snag, antimicrobial fabric. The fit is clean and modern and still very practical, and that's why I've become a convert. And with the holidays right around the corner, it's a perfect time to treat yourself with some fresh looks for the new year, which is great because FIGS just dropped a ton of new limited edition colors and styles for the season. So if you want to check them out, FIGS is offering 15% off your first purchase at wearfigs.com with a code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
Can I just point out maybe an elephant in the room? Like, I'm sort of glad that we have taken the time to dissect the BALANCE trial, but at least for me, I feel like we've been doing 7 days of antibiotics for bacteremia for quite some time now.
But hey, at least now we have stronger evidence to make us feel good that what we've been doing is on the right track.
And just because you've been doing it doesn't mean that everybody across the country or across the world has been doing it. Some trials are paradigm changing and some trials are paradigm reinforcing. And so infections are this area where more and more data has been pointing us to the idea shorter duration of antibiotics is probably good enough for most patients. And now balance comes in, 6 times the number of patients ever enrolled in a trial on bacteremia. And it tells us that those small studies haven't been barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, just to push you a little bit on that, Greg, does that make you feel like the resources used to run this trial could have been used elsewhere if we already sort of suspected what these results were going to be?
No, I don't think that's fair, because there's a difference between results we expected to be true versus results that we actually know to be true. And so a trial result doesn't have to be unexpected to be important. Think about how many topics we know pretty small amounts about, and we don't have great quality studies to guide our decision making. The balance trial tells me that we can feel comfortable. The direction of evidence has been moving in the right direction. We don't need to totally upend our messaging to tell people that, no, well, actually, you've been doing this thing wrong, because now we did a trial with 6 times the number of people and it showed the opposite of what we thought.
Yeah. That reminds me of previous episodes where there was like signals in smaller trials pointing to one direction, and then a large trial comes in, and then in a more modern era, and, you know, goes completely against what those small trials showed, particularly like the MINT trial with transfusion threshold.
And so this trial is important, not because it's breaking our paradigm or moving the needle for a million different patients, but reinforcing the direction of the evidence is moving correctly. And this is about the default. And when the default changes, this means a lot of really important things for patients all over the place, especially when it comes to antibiotic stewardship.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key takeaway here is that for an immunocompetent patient with uncomplicated gram-negative bacteremia, 7 days is the default rather than just an acceptable option.
So I think if you start at 7 days and then you end up doing 10 days or 14 days and you can articulate, and this is often what we're doing on rounds, just to be completely transparent, you know, patient needs at least 7 days, but they were sort of still had a low rate bacteremia on day 2 of treatment, were really sick coming in, they're, you know, elderly, they've got these comorbidities that, you know, I think in our judgment, we're doing the patient a favor rather than a harm by going for 10 days or a longer course. But a lot of that is sort of nuanced decision making that's not necessarily captured by a super targeted trial.
So I see this all the time. People name drop a trial without fully understanding the results, the nuances, the limitations, and why you could do something different in actual clinical practice.
Yeah, if we don't take the time to read the fine print, we can definitely misapply and do possible harm. For example, hopefully no one is misled that 7 days of antibiotics is also fair game for esoteric bacteria, like the HACIC organisms, mycobacteria like TB, Listeria, Cabinocytophaga, Brucella, the other Ellas, Umbrella, since those organisms were not included in the trial.
Thanks for having me.
So thinking about the exclusion criteria, we would still do longer antibiotic duration for patients with complicated Staph aureus bacteremia, endocarditis, osteomyelitis, those who don't have source control, and persistent fever, despite the appropriate antibiotics.
Or if a patient is immunocompromised or some type of underlying condition that makes them more vulnerable. Treatment for bacteremia or any infection is not one size fits all. We still need to individualize based on who the patient is, the source of infection, and the organism.
We're hoping this Beyond Journal Club episode can leave people with a nuanced understanding to interpret this trial and really see where it actually applies to the patient in front of them.
Yeah, and there's really not one easy place to look for all the answers. That's the beauty of medicine. So determining that antibiotic duration for each patient requires a combination of trial data, institutional guidelines, and clinical judgment.
Yeah, I know. I think I feel excited the next time I'm on service and ID recommends 7 days or 10 days or 14 days. I think I'll feel a little bit more in the loop as to why versus just like taking their word like, oh yeah, they said 10 days. I think ultimately optimizing antibiotic treatment duration is so nuanced. You know, I'm glad we have our ID colleagues to help us weigh the efficacy versus overtreatment.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, like we said before, that overtreating also has its consequences. So you really do have to balance both sides when deciding on antibiotic duration for each patient.
I'm surprised that hasn't come up more.
And with that, it's a wrap for today.
If you found this episode helpful, please share with your team and colleagues or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. It really does help people find us.
Thank you to Jim and Wong for the accompanying graphic.
And if you have any feedback, please email us at hello@coreiumpodcast.com.
Opinions expressed are our own and do not represent the opinions of any affiliated institutions.
We've said nuance so many times now. To just be able to look under the hood. Like, yeah, they're not pulling numbers out of a hat.
They're throwing them at a dartboard.
Sorry. It was this whole Twitter thread of an ID doc at Emory talking about, like, are they just throwing darts? And I was like, yes, that's how I thought about it all the time. But now,
yeah, like Shreya keeps all her darts in a hat.
Like the dartboard. Yes, it's a dartboard. That's what the word I was looking for.
The holidays are sneaking up fast, and I've got to say, I love Uncommon Goods. As the name suggests, it's full of one-of-a-kind gifts you won't find anywhere else. For example, I've definitely gotten stuck years before on things to get my nieces or nephews. It feels like they have everything, right? But Uncommon Goods has things that are truly different, thoughtful, high quality, handmade often, made right here in the U.S. And there's something for everyone, moms, dads, teens, foodies, aka all my cousins, even gardening stuff for my dad. So I found so many fun personal ideas I haven't seen before. And if you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not just checking something off a list, you're also supporting artists, small independent businesses, and many of their products are made in small batches. So if something catches your eyes, definitely scoop it up before it sells out. And I love this. With every purchase, they donate $1 to any nonprofit partner of your choice. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/coream. That's uncommongoods.com/coream to get 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited offer. And as they say, Uncommon Goods, because we're all out of the ordinary. And now, back to the episode.